Hey Junkions, Brian here. It's a sad day here at Junk Food HQ as we definitely just lost a legend in the great Burt Reynolds. Burt was a guy who made an absolute art out of nonchalance. He looked like he was just having fun on every movie set, and it belied the amount of natural talent he really did have. And we absolutely love his movies. And in fact, we recorded a patron-exclusive minisode last summer for Smokey and the Bandit. And in honor of Burt, we decided that we would re-release that episode for everyone to hear. So please enjoy this Smokey and the Bandit episode. And wherever you are, Bandit, I hope there's no speed limit in heaven.
One of us is going to have to do it. I mean, you know what this episode's about. You know what the subject is.
Wait, which episode are we doing right now?
We're doing a little Summer of 77 entry.
Oh,
so.
Well then. Bound it down,
loaded up and trucking.
We gonna do what they say can't be done. We got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch your band and run.
Oh man, do you think you're thirsty in Atlanta? Because there's beer
in
Texarkana.
There is. Oh man, I'm so excited to finally talk about this movie because I love this movie.
I fucking adore this movie.
And this movie is one of the dumbest fucking movies to love. Like, you want to talk about, like, Hal Needham movies are not exactly the peak of intelligentsia.
How dare you?
And yet, this movie is arguably among his dumbest. And yet...
You said that as if you were about to defend it, and you said, like, a lot of his movies are dumb, but this one is the dumbest.
Among, because he also did Cannonball Run 2, and The Villain. But even then, there's, like, more going on
in The Villain
than there is. Like, because here's... Let's just lay this down. Because, first of all, we love this movie.
I am so happy we're talking about this
like,
movie.
Like, this is such an enjoyable blockbuster. This is one of those early blockbusters. This, along with Hooper, which we need to do a full episode on because Hooper deserves to be talked about at some point, is the reason Hal Needham had a career as a director and why we got the glory that is Megaforce. But this movie is really about a guy who gets conned into running this bet.
Yeah.
And is going to make a lot of money.
Well, the thing
is, he's a very flawed guy who gets pretty much just tricked into it, then goes to get beer, and then gets pursued by a cop with no authority to pursue him whatsoever.
Oh, none at all.
And ultimately, there's nothing else going on in this movie.
So I have some questions to get us kicked off here. One being, Cargill, how much do you think Jonathan Schneider and Tom Wopat owe Hal Needham for having a job for 7 years? Because there would be no Dukes of Hazzard, but whatsoever, were it not for the mammoth success of Smokey and the Bandit.
At last, a warm, sensitive, touching story about the close personal relationship between a man and a woman. Between a trucker and his dog.
Fred, I'm so damn tired of picking you up. I got to Fred.
Between a father.
No way.
And his son.
No way that you could come from my loins.
And how they all took to the road one day for a quiet little drive in the country. From Georgia to Texas and back. In 28 hours flat. With a truckload of bootleg beer. Now, who would do a thing like that?
You're crazy, you know that?
Yeah.
You know it.
Yes.
Universal presents Burt Reynolds, Sally Field, Jerry Reed, and Fred. And the only thing that stands between them and an $80,000 prize, Jackie Gleason as Sheriff Buford T. Justice.
I gotta barbecue your...
Smokey and the Bandit, proving once and for all, it's not where you're going that counts. It's who the hell's in back of you.
Yeah, no, in fact, what we need to talk about here is Smokey and the Bandit is the epic movie of one of our favorite subgenres that we don't really spend a lot of time talking about. I don't know why we haven't done it, But
Hicksploitation.
Yes. It is the greatest Hicksploitation movie ever made.
Hilariously, 90% of Hicksploitation movies star Burt Reynolds.
90% of the best ones.
Yes, agreed.
Because there are several, there's a whole mess of Hicksploitation movies that we have
not even gotten. I'll give you three guesses, Cargill. Who stars in the other 10%?
Bo Svenson?
No, the proto-Bo Svenson. The original Bo Svenson, the one before Bo Svenson
franchise. Well, yeah, but the thing is Bo Svenson was in more of those movies than he was, Jodan Baker.
But Jodan Baker's in the best ones.
Jodan Baker is in the best ones, but Bo Svenson then takes over and did more of them. Like, you asked the other 90, you asked for the other 10%, Bo Svenson.
I should have said the other 10% of the best ones.
Yeah, no, the best ones, like, yeah, Jodan Baker and Burt fucking Reynolds. And, yeah, Burt, you know, this is a classic exploitation movie. What is the point of this fucking movie? It is just the story of a legend.
Yeah.
A guy who is a legend, and everyone has heard of this fucking guy, and he's, you know, not making a lot of money right now. He's making money, you know, fucking hanging out at truck shows. He's a trucker who doesn't truck in this movie.
No, even though they say that they're eastbound and trucking, there's only one person doing any trucking in this movie.
And it's the snowman.
I want to say this real quick. I have a theory that there's a version out there of No Country for Old Men where instead of Tommy Lee Jones, it's Jackie Gleason. And at the end of the movie, he's just sitting at a dining room table telling a story about the bandit who got away. And it's just, you realize the entire movie is just like the recollections of an old lawman. And in this case, an old, extremely racist cartoon lawman played by Jackie Gleason.
Yeah, it's
Buford D. Justice.
This is the pinnacle of exploitation because, first of all, the law is either inept or racist and evil.
Yep. Check.
The heroes are technically criminals, but they aren't really doing anything wrong as much as the law is wrong. That's one of the weird things about this movie. This movie is such a time capsule.
Yes.
Because there are two major elements to the movie that you need. It's why you can never remake Smokey and the Bandit. In fact, I will explain how to remake Smokey and the Bandit, and it can't work. Mm-hmm. You just cannot do it. It works for two reasons. One, we were still in an era where a lot of states had blue laws and had not totally given in to the idea that prohibition was over. Like, a bunch of these religious areas had refused to acknowledge that to let people drink legally. And so certain alcohols could not be moved from state to state. So something like Coors, which at the time in the 70s was amongst the very best of the massively distributed beers.
Wrap your heads around that.
Could not be, well, I mean, it's a different time. Like, this is the, you know, we're talking about very young baby boomers and the older version of the Greatest Generation, where, you know, all of a sudden, you know, beer had not, you know, all these distributors have been shut down previously before Prohibition. So all these other ones had started up. And finally, we had mass produced beer. When you opened a can of beer, you knew it was going to be, you knew exactly what it was going to taste like. It was going to taste like every other can of beer just like this. And that was a big deal.
Yeah.
So Coors was, you know, a delicacy east of the Mississippi.
It was the banquet beer.
But it was not legal to drive across those states.
Put the nitro so back in the box, partner.
As they tell you twice in this movie, it, you know, when driving it east of the Mississippi, driving it out of Texas, was bootlegging.
Well, yes, that, and there's another historical element that we need to touch upon, which is that Coors was a pasteurized beer.
Yes.
And it needed constant refrigeration, which was the other reason you could not sell it east of the Mississippi, because they didn't have the big refrigerated trucks required to move mass amounts of a pasteurized beer.
Yeah.
So there were health concerns as well.
The other element was that at this point in history, and this is something that I've had to deal with in terms of a screenplay that I worked on, is that at this point in history,
Smokey and the Bagul? Please tell me you're working on Smokey and the Bagul.
No, it's the script I've talked about a couple times publicly about Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy is a big reason the FBI would end up getting together and forming this group that would oversee and connect all of these different law enforcement agencies, because law enforcement agencies, we didn't have computers that were connected together. We didn't have the internet. They didn't fucking talk to each other, and they didn't like it when other people stepped on their dicks. So a lot of people kept information themselves, which is why things like serial killers were so successful during the 70s, was because as long as they kept bopping from area to area, murders, information on murders would not be put together, and nobody would go, aha, it's one guy doing this. So you could kill people in different towns and different counties, and it would never get put together as a serial killer. Well, with these particular, with someone like this character of Smokey, of the bandit, once you're out of someone's jurisdiction, they can't chase you anymore. They can't chase you across state line. They may have agreements with other counties that they're a county sheriff or the highway patrol could chase you. But the minute you got across state lines, they could not do it. And they would have to contact other people. So the reason this movie works is the bandit gets on these, you know, these big chases, loses the guys, and then they're across the county line or the state line, and there's nothing they can really do about them anymore. And then it's like, well, not our problem anymore. Somebody else can deal with them. We tried to catch him. We fucked up. We fucked up our cars. But Buford T. Justice, because his son was going to marry this flighty girl who realized halfway down the aisle, I just met this guy. I don't want to fucking marry him. I'm out. Has been, it was a slap in the face. So he's just chasing the bandit for the sake of chasing him. And man, is he a evil, misogynistic, racist, and wonderfully presented character. Like, not only is Jackie Gleason having a lot of fun with it, but it is a very carefully written character. Like, we know he's racist. He never drops the N-word.
No.
Like, we were talking about, like, last week we talked about, or maybe it's this week, we're doing it all at once. They're talking about Extreme Prejudice, where we have a character with William Forsythe who we know he's a misogynist. We know he's a racist because he keeps dropping these words. Buford T. Justice is like, hey, boy, where's your sheriff? Well, I'm the sheriff. Oh, well, on the radio, you sound taller. Like, and it's so well crafted of, like, he's racist, but he knows he's in this guy's jurisdiction.
And by the way, the actor playing that black sheriff is about 6 foot six.
So. Yeah. And it's such a great classic. This is why rednecks hate cops kind of thing. Right. Like, the cops can't even acknowledge that they're fucking racist. Like, this is what is so great about Smokey and the Bandit. It is a perfect representation of, like, there was a viral video that went out last year during the Black Lives Matter thing, where you had a bunch of the people marching around talking about Blue Lives Matter. You have a bunch of people going after Black Lives Matter. And there's this redneck who did this, who's a stand-up comedian who did a video going, at what point did we side with the cops? Like, the rednecks and cops are natural enemies. Like, these are not our friends. Like, has a cop ever shown up and you said, oh, thank God the cops are here, rednecks?
Yeah.
No. In fact, our favorite movies are movies where rednecks outthink and outrun the cops. Like, that's
very much so.
That is what this is. In fact, this is, if it were not for Smokey and the Bandit, would we have the Fast and Furious franchise?
Oh, no. Oh, no. I mean, if it weren't for Hal Needham, we wouldn't have that franchise. That is 100% correct. But one thing I love about this movie that I don't think gets enough credit, it is sharply written. It's like a fucking Shane Black script at points. The dialogue is just so rapid fire back and forth. And a lot of that is Burt Reynolds, who is very George Clooney-like in this movie. He's just like exudes all of this charm. And it is effortless, these lines that are just falling out of his mouth, and they're so funny and so quick, and he just feels like he's on another planet from the rest of the movie.
And yet, in true Hal Needham fashion, there's a few scenes in this movie that you could tell are entirely ad-libbed.
Oh, 100%.
That you put Burt Reynolds in a scene with someone, and they just let the camera go, and in this case, it's him and Sally Field. And there's
by the way, so fucking adorable in this movie. It's,
oh God,
unbelievable.
Yes, Frog. Yeah, she's just great as Frog. And their chemistry, you can feel the genuine chemistry they had going on.
Well, they were dating at the time, so that makes a lot of sense.
No, you feel that genuine chemistry, but their dialogue in certain scenes is so sharp and so well done. And then there's other scenes where you could just tell they're just fucking around and playing off each other. And you could see the wheels turning inside their head as they're trying to come up with the clever response to whatever it is. And sometimes it really works. And which would become a hallmark of Needham Burt Reynolds films, where they would just kind of let Burt Reynolds team up with someone like Dom DeLuise, or in this case, her, and just pull the cord and let him go and turn the camera on and just wait for Burt Reynolds to laugh, because that laugh is fucking infectious. It's infectious. Like, when he's laughing, you're laughing. And you like, that was the thing. And it was, this is actually a big departure from the previous film that he and Hal Needham did, which was, I think, Hal Needham's best film and his most soulful film with Hooper. And we'll talk about that eventually. But this is definitely the movie where they just said, let's have fun and let's do this. And I love how they craft him as a legend and how we slowly see how big of a legend he is through the South.
Yes.
Like, the thing is
via the use of CB radio.
And in Texas, they don't know who the Bandit is. Nobody knows who the fucking Bandit is. But once you get across, you know, get out of Texarkana, you cross the Mississippi. Oh, everybody knows who the Bandit is.
Oh, yeah. And in Georgia, where he's from. Yeah. Everybody, I mean, and it's the perfect, like, the quintessential way in the South of somebody become a legend. He's at a, like, semi-truck race RV show, and it basically has his own little autograph booth. Like, that is the height of fame in this time in the South. And I love the Big Enos and Little Enos, who you mentioned before. A lot of this movie is predicated upon a dare. Actually makes a lot of sense when you think about the other, like, big car movies of this era, including
The Car?
No. No, The Car, which is amazing. No, movies like Vanishing Point. Vanishing Point is a movie about a guy who, just because no one else has done it, is trying to drive across country in the quickest amount of time possible. There was that spirit of, like, we're going to do this just because we can in the late 70s, that totally feeds into the motivation of why they're hauling Coors from one side of the country to the other in this movie, just because we want to see if we can fucking do it.
I also love that one third of this cast is made up of really charming singers.
That's true. Like, Paul Williams and Jerry Reed.
Yeah. And oddly enough, we don't get a Paul Williams song in this movie. Like, you've got Paul Williams in the movie and you don't get a Paul Williams song.
That's sacrilege.
One of the greatest pop songwriters of all time. We have not done, we need to do, like, a Paul Williams episode at some point.
Starting with Phantom of the Paradise, the Muppet movie. Oh my God, there's so many we could do.
Oh yeah, but Paul Williams is just a fucking genius, and he's just here kind of having fun being made fun of by Burt Reynolds. And of course, and then we've got Jerry Reed, who ends up getting a Smokey and the Bandit movie all his own eventually.
It's because of that song. That fucking song became bigger than this movie.
But he wrote three songs for this movie.
Yeah, and the other two
technically
are...
technically four. Yeah. Because there's one that he doesn't get credited for because it's essentially the same song. But in this song, there is a sequence which is westbound.
Thank you.
Down.
I thought it was fucking crazy. I thought it was having a stroke. I'm like,
No. That's that. Nobody. The song is Eastbound and Down, and the song that everyone knows, and the full song that got radio play, that was a hit song, and the song you can sing at karaoke. How do I know that? Because I fucking sing it at karaoke. Eastbound and Down is the song. But in the beginning of this movie, they're singing Westbound and Down, and they're talking. They're singing about going to Texarkana to get the beer. And so technically there's that, there's the legend, and there's one other song. I think it's called The Bandit, that are all Jerry Reed, and Jerry Reed fucking nails it. And Jerry Reed is fucking great in this movie. And he's great as Snowman. Snowman is just such a fun character. Snowman and Fred are just great.
I love the scene in this movie where the asshole bikers are threatening Fred. Because you're like, oh no, Fred, we all love Fred. And then you just watch Jerry Reed fake being demure and then just, like, start beating the shit out of these guys, like, for threatening his dog. I love it.
No, he doesn't. That's the beauty of it. He doesn't. He gets the shit beat out of him.
He does, but initially he is beating the. He gets a couple of great swings at those guys and knocks them off their ass.
Then he gets his ass kicked and then he goes out. And the way it's set up, it's one of Hal Needham's finest moments.
Yeah.
The way it's set up is you kind of know it's coming, but they don't telegraph it. And you just wait to watch as he runs over all those bikes on the way.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just so, it's so great. And yeah, this movie is pure charm. It is pure charm and charisma. And it is just nothing but a road movie and a conversation between several characters. And that's pretty much it. And broken up by, again, what Hal Needham did best. What Hal Needham did best is Hal Needham has a bunch of really great stunts that he makes look effortless.
That's the thing. We haven't even really talked about the stunts yet, which is Hal Needham's bread and butter.
Because he makes it so effortless.
Yes.
Like, that's the thing, is he makes them feel like they are just part of the landscape. Like the Dukes of Hazzard exists because of this movie, but the Dukes of Hazzard highlights every stunt. You know, you see those stunts in slow motion. You see that jump in slow motion. You see those cars round corners in slow motion. Fucking Hal Needham, just bam, 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 bam. They happen. If you blink, you miss it. Don't worry. There'll be another one soon. He bashes a lot of cars. He ruins a lot of cars. There's a reason why there are a number of people own the Bandit car, because they used several Bandit cars in the making of this movie. True. And restored all of them. I had a chance to buy one once. I had the money in the bank. The Bandit car was up for sale. I could afford it. And my wife is like, no, you're not buying the Bandit car. And I'm like, but honey, I want to buy the Bandit car. And she's like, no, you cannot have the Bandit car. We're going to buy a house instead. She's giving me the finger as we speak. She's just come into the room. She heard me talking about this. She's like, go fuck yourself. I wanted a house, not a Bandit car. And I was like, we can sleep in the Bandit car. It'll be okay. And
I cannot tell at all whether I am gaining or losing respect for you during the course of the story. Like, it's inner turmoil. I don't know where it's kind of tough.
Like, it really is. Like, you could own the Bandit car, the car that Sally Field and Burt Reynolds sat in, that Hal Needham probably drove around as well. You can point out which scenes in the movie this particular Bandit car's in, or you could own your own home. And so I ended up listening to my wife, because my wife is the smart one in the family, and I own my own home, but not a Bandit car. And there's just a small portion of me that this is the only time I'm going to bitch about it. Like, this is the reason why my wife came in. It's not something she hears about every week. She has not heard about this story in a couple of years. And now she's giving me the finger again. There's the finger. I love you, baby. I think
she keeps doing
that. Thank you for getting us a house and not the Bandit car.
She keeps doing that because what we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law. And that's another thing I love about this movie. We mentioned it before, is how great the fucking dialogue is. There's one moment where, by the way, crazy thing. I've forgotten this was Sally Field's character name in this movie. When
Frog.
That girl's actual name. When she shows up in this movie, I thought she's very funny. She's very independent. She's very, like, very much a firecracker. She reminds me of a young Carrie Fisher. And then immediately after I thought that, she introduced herself as Carrie. And I was like, okay, that's creepy, because I only remember her as Frog, which he calls her because she's cute and he wants to jump her. But there's a great line where she says, Mr. Bandit, you have a lyrical way of cutting through the bullshit. And he responds, and you have a way with the English language, Miss Frog. And just, like, it's so effortless between the two of them, just ping-ponging these lines back and forth. And him and Jerry Reed are the same way. Jerry Reed tells him, like, you can't drive a forklift. I can drive any forking thing I want. It's just like it just come flying off the cuff in a way that's so fun. And you can't help but be charmed out of your socks by everyone in this movie.
Yeah.
And the stunt work. Jesus Christ, the stunt work.
There's only one real flaw to this movie. I mean, aside from the fact that it's fucking stupid. Aside from that.
Eastbound and Dumb, still we really love it.
We really love it.
We gonna love what they say can't be loved.
The son. Jackie Gleason's son.
Junior
is so underused and obnoxious. Like, and there's so much that could have easily been done with him. Like, you know, really kind of being the driving force. Like, daddy, I never thought I was going to get married. And finally I met the girl and now she's run away. And all she needs to do is see me again. But she's, She's been kidnapped by the bandit. We got to get her back, Daddy. Like anything like that to give him a motivation other than just being the guy that holds his hat in place once the top of their car gets taken off. Like he's just moronic to the point of he's just literally there to get, I feel like he was an afterthought that Buford T, they were sitting there and going, well, Buford T Justice needs somebody to talk to. We can't just have him driving around in the car. Well, we'll have him his son.
We can't have him being racist to himself the whole time.
Well, I mean, I really feel like there was probably that moment where it's like, well, we've got nothing for the son to do. Well, let's just have the son there in the tuxedo. And that explains everything and why he's doing this.
Which might have worked if the actor wasn't so wooden. Like they may have been able to pull it off, but
he's
feel
got
like
no dialogue that doesn't end in Buford T. Justice like whapping him with his hat and telling him to shut up.
I get that it's a one note joke, but I feel like the problem is that actor takes the one note joke and adds to it a one note physicality that just isn't interesting to watch. So I feel like you have that double pronged problem of it's a one note joke and it's not being delivered very well.
I love that this movie also is clearly the impetus for Cannonball Run. And it's like Smokey and the Bandit was such a huge hit. How do we do that again? And it's like, well, we can't just have them go and get more beer because that was what Smokey and the Bandit 2 pretty much was. What if we just have them drive cross country? What if we have them, you know, literally it's a race and it's all these people racing and that just ups the end. And then we have more characters. And of course, CB culture wasn't cool anymore. So, of course, you take away the CB element.
There's so much fucking CB culture in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
So
and
much shit
really
that I'm like
selling
I don't know what the fuck you guys are saying, but it looks fun. I don't know. Like, you pick up on it like when they call something a Texas gumball machine. It's like oh a cop car. Okay, I got guys, it's a cop car. I figured it out.
Texas County Mountie.
It's 40 years later and everyone else started to figure this out. Okay, fine, just me. That's whatever. And another thing I really love about this movie, it is the movie that survived in the wake of Star Wars, because this was released 2 fucking days officially after the first release of Star Wars. 2 days. And it still made $127 million in 1977. Think about that for a second.
Yeah, it was. This is another big one of the huge hits. It's why we're doing Summer of 77. Think about this already. Like, the car may not have been on your radar. The car wasn't on my radar for a lot of years. But Sorcerer kind of got lost. But those are both really great movies.
Right.
And then we get to Star Wars and Smokey and the Bandit, which are two of the biggest hits of the 70s. Like, these are gargantuan monster hits.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about. Like, this is, and they're so, you know, endemic of the, like, they are very much what we love about the 70s. And so we had to do this summer.
Yeah, there's no way we weren't. And it's funny because we started thinking about 1987, 30 years ago, and then going back another 10 years and looking at the impact of what had become what had come the decade before, and there was no way we couldn't talk about the landmark season that was the summer of 1977, and this is one of the major tentpoles of that summer.
Yeah, and it's such an enjoyable movie. It is a perfect, it is everything we love about Hicksploitation, and it is perfectly executed. It's about a legend.
Charming characters, defiant personality, underdog story, great stunts.
Blue collar as fuck.
Very shit kicker soundtrack.
Like, what's the ultimate goal of this? It's not just to prove that they can do it. It's to get a new truck. We need a new truck.
Meanwhile, Lincoln Hawk's like, oh, you mean I didn't have to arm wrestle? I could just drive beer. I could have done that. Yeah, no, getting a truck is the major motivation of this movie. And again, just real quick, the stunts in this movie, there's one stunt where they come barreling into a football game full of kids. And I'm just like, oh, this feels irresponsible. Oh, this feels irresponsible. Oh, this feels. And I looked it up. And sure enough, apparently there was almost a major accident on set because the groundskeeper of that football field didn't know they were filming a movie and watered the field. So all of a sudden, yeah, think about how close those cars get to those kids. And in the first couple of takes, they were on a unbeknownst to them, they were on a wet field. The stunts in this movie are so good they feel irresponsible. That is a high compliment that I'm paying to Hal Needham.
I mean, that's how Hal Needham got his start, and that's who Hal Needham was. And it's why Hal Needham's, like, all of his movies, the stunts feel effortless. You forget that they're stunt-driven movies because as that was what he saw to be the pinnacle of stunt work, was stunt work so good it feels natural, like acting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the best performances are not big over the top scene chewing performances. They're subtle performances where you forget the actor is in there.
Exactly.
That they've just become the character. And that's how Hal Needham approaches stunt work. Like, it is the, if a stunt didn't impress you, don't worry. Another one will come along where it will. And that it's literally just stunt after stunt after stunt after stunt to where you are focusing on the characters and the danger those characters are in, not just how amazing the stunt work is. And it's a wonderful, wonderful 180 from what you'd expect from a stuntman.
And that's the problematic nature of stunt work, is when you do it really well, people don't recognize that you've really done anything at all. It's supposed to be seamless. And I love the stunt in this movie where they land a cop car on top of a moving semi.
Oh yeah.
I still don't know how they did that. Like, the timing on that must have been absurd.
Yeah. And it's just done as a quick little gag, and then we're off.
Yeah. Oh, God, I love Smokey and the Bandit. I love this movie so much.
Yeah, really great movie. Worth revisiting. Like, it's literally, the plot is so light, a stiff breeze blows it over. But, and you know, the logic of this cop following him across country is just for the sake of giving us a real antagonist. But you know what? It delivers, and it's fun all the way through, and well worth revisiting.
And I will guarantee you this, Junkions. I just read a piece here that said Jackie Gleason would, on set, often ask his assistant, whose name was Mal, for a hamburger, which apparently for Jackie Gleason at this time, a hamburger was code for a glass of bourbon. So I can guarantee you, Junkions, from this point forward, I will every so often be asking for a hamburger, and I am not asking for a hamburger. Just throwing that out there. Thank you so much for joining us for this installment of Summer of 77, the movie that wasn't crushed by Star Wars, one of the greatest exploitation movies of all time, near and dear to our hearts, Hal Needham's Smokey and the Bandit. If you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor. Eastbound, westbound, whichever direction you have to go, any which way but loose, get yourself a copy of Smokey and the Bandit right now.
Eastbound and down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Some never mind them brakes. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. The boys are thirsty in Atlanta, and there's beer in Texarkana, and we'll bring it back no more.